Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to episode 16 of Blue Jays Happy Hour. I'm Nick Ashbourne, joined as always by Andrew Stoughton on this Friday the 13th. We are not necessarily a superstitious podcast, but we are a cursed podcast, Stoughton. So what do you think is going to happen on this, the Friday the 13th episode of Blue Jays Happy Hour? Who are we cursing this week?
Oh, I don't want to even put that out into the world, really, to be honest with you. I didn't know it was Friday the 13th. I'm not a big calendar guy. Personally, that should come to the surprise of literally no one. I don't know. I'm like, just don't say a Blue Jays player. I don't know. Maybe it just means a loss to the stupid Mariners. Which at this point, based on how people reacted to last night's loss, that would probably be sufficient enough to count as a curse.
Yeah, at this point, I mean the value of those wins and losses are so high. I'll just quickly put in just, you know, Julian Merriweather setback, because that's like an easy placeholder for that. And especially with some optimism with him, and we'll talk about that later. It is interesting, you know, people are living and dying by every win and loss right now, which makes sense because, you know, last time we talked, the Fangraphs odds were something like 44%. Since then, the Blue Jays have gone 4-3 and they've actually come down. And that's because, like, the other teams around them are playing pretty well. And also, time is so much not on their side. Like, there's a real sense of urgency. We're sort of nearing that midpoint of August. So every loss, you know, the difference between splitting with the Angels and, you know, taking a 3-1 against the Angels is incredibly significant. And it's funny because baseball is always like, it's a long season. Don't overreact to one game. But we're getting down to the point where, you know, the one game matters to such a degree that I think it's okay to give people the license to overreact.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, this is it. We're doing the thing. This is the thing. They're chasing a playoff spot in August, in mid-August. Like, the thing that we didn't have for 22 years or whatever it was before 2015 and 16, and then that disappeared immediately after that. So, yeah, that I'm fine with that. And it is, you know, their hopes are on a knife's edge, and they... You know, each win does matter, and each, like, the scoreboard watching matters too. Like, you know, people were pumped when, well, you know, people were watching that Field of Dreams game. Apparently, I did not, but but like Tim Anderson walking off the Yankees, that was huge. That's a thing. And you know, yeah, like you say, the odds have gone down, but they have, you know, with the homestand that they had, they've clawed back some ground, and it's much more realistic now than it was, you know, a week before the trade deadline. I think even if the playoff odds maybe don't reflect it, it feels good. I was looking at the schedule, the month of September, or like their last, I guess, 27 games are 13 against either the Yankees or Rays, which is a problem, but does put their destiny in their own hands a little bit. But then the other 14, are against either the Orioles or Twins, which, is better news.
Yeah, I mean, and the next little stretch too is significant, right? We've got the Mariners, then you've got the Nationals and the Tigers. Like, that's a huge slate of 8 games, and coming away with anything less than 5-3 is a big problem, and 6-2 is kind of what you want to get out of that ideally, and then whatever, you know.
Yeah, but, absolutely. And it's doable, but
yeah, like those teams aren't good. Yeah. Those teams are not good at all. Yeah, like you said, it's very doable, but it is, the split with the Angels, that's not a good outcome anymore. Like, no. You can't tread water anymore. And it, like, even looking
not at... Not against a team that has one good player, yeah. Even though he is...
Well, he's two good players, good. Basically.
Yes, he is, yeah.
To be fair to him, but... No, like you look up at the standings, and I think the Blue Jays talking today, their last 10 is like 7-3, and you're like, that's great. And then you look down, and it's like, oh, so are the Yankees. So it, you know, it's tough. Like, you got to catch the Yankees and the Red Sox and those teams. You know, talk about strength of schedule. The Blue Jays' strength of schedule right now going forward is 493. That's really beneficial for them. But mm-hmm. You know, whose is 487? Is the Red Sox.
Yeah.
So. You need, it's not enough to sort of win and be good. Like, the Blue Jays have to be great from here on out, and they can be. And we've seen, like, we watched this homestand, we've seen how great this team can be with the starting pitching and the way the offense supports it, and, like, you know, just enough out of the bullpen. This team can produce a great stretch, but it really has to. And this next chunk of 8 games is one of them that they just can't afford not to capitalize on.
It would be nice if some of those teams ahead of them would stop winning games also, though. I mean, I know the Red Sox have a little bit, but that would make their lives a lot easier. I know I was looking back and I've seen people on Twitter talking about, you know, the 2015 comparisons and how they're sort of on pace, you know, with that 2015 team. But that team only won 93 games, and which is, you know, a great amount of games to win, but not, you know, there's real good teams around. And I think if you look at what happened that year, the teams between them and the division title around this time were not doing what the Red Sox and the Yankees and the Rays are doing and the A's are doing as well. Though I'm wrong about the Red Sox. They've been sliding a little bit. But, you know, you got to control what's in front of you, I guess. That's how they would put it. And, I mean, this is what we signed up for. This is the fun bit. It's always sort of wild to be like, oh yeah, finally, the good part of sports. I'm riddled with anxiety for every single moment.
Yeah, I mean, and people talk about, you know, meaningful September baseball. That's the cliche, right? But the promise isn't like, oh, playoffs and then playoff success. The promise is you get a shot. Like, that shot may not pan out. It may not pan out for the Blue Jays. Like, it's, like you said, it's kind of at a knife's edge, and it's in the 40% right now. I'd probably say maybe it's higher than that, just some of the way that they're playing and the boost they've got from coming home. But you're putting all these cards on the table to have a chance, not to, you know, ride in smoothly. And, you know, like the Houston Astros know they're making the playoffs, or, you know, the Milwaukee Brewers know they're going to make the playoffs, or the White Sox or whatever. That's not what the Blue Jays...
Well, the Brewers got that Rowdy Tellez kid, so obviously...
Yeah, top 10 hitter in the bigs.
Happy for him.
Whatever. We'll Richards is great.
He has been huge. Yeah.
He actually has been like a big difference maker.
Yeah.
I did want to kind of start today on our sort of Blue Jays mascot, which is Alek Manoah. Because it's funny that when we start talking about Manoah, you know, we knew we were a little bit over the top on him. And even when we had our over under episode, we talked about, like, okay, realistically, let's put a number to it. And it was sort of like, is he going to be a league average starter or not? And then he was kind of that as he started, but the way it splits out, and it's because he had that amazing start this week, but if you take his first 5 starts, you're looking at a 4.18 ERA, 6.18 FIP, less than 5 innings pitched per start, and 7 home runs against. Like, we were excited about a lot of things, and justifiably so, and he had kept hard contact down to some degree, although other than the home runs, obviously. Like, his xERA wasn't as bad as that FIP. But then if you look at his last 6 starts, we're talking about 1.53 ERA, 2.33 FIP, and 1 home run against in 35 innings. Now, the home run thing, there's a little bit of flukiness to that, and there'll be some regression there and whatnot, but the whole, can Manoah be like a guy who holds his own and is a solid 4th starter? Like, we were happy with that premise. Like, oh, that would be great if he kind of holds down a back rotation spot with competence. And very quickly, it's been, okay, is this guy someone with actual front of the rotation potential? And he certainly like looked like that this week.
He sure did. Yeah, no, it's pretty special. You never know where this stuff is going to go. A year ago, we thought that this would be Nate Pearson doing this, but it looks real good. It looks like it's legit. He's getting big leaguers to swing and miss a bunch, and you know, not. not allowing hard contact. I mean, the what was it? He was close to tying or setting that record about 11 straight starts with like four or fewer hits and more than three innings or whatever.
Yeah, those kind of fun facts are always so tortured because, like, you can just move your sliders around a little bit and figure out exactly. Not that that's, you know, it's not impressive, but it's just those ones are always funny to me. Where yeah, it's like, it's the best guy who did this in this exact amount of time, but, like, not only was it four hits, but it was also more than six strikeouts or whatever it was. It's
yeah, it's not exactly. You don't set out your season to set those kind of records or, you know. But no, I don't know what to say about it, to be honest, other than it's been really awesome and it looks like he's for real. And until that stops being the case, you have to wonder how, we were just talking about how their playoff odds are not that great. But I mean, the playoff rotation, he's nominally their fourth starter. I don't know who you remove from a rotation. But man, he looks like somebody that is real, real important to this team right now.
Yeah, he's one of, when you talk about sort of the playoff odds and what guys will be projected for, like, he's one of those sort of projection busters who, like, a system isn't going to build in that type of, you know, the rapid mm-hmm. advancement that he's making. I mean, what stands out to me right now is just, like, his velocity has even gone down in a couple of starts. The pitch mix is basically the same, although he was basically, you know, a lot of fastballs against the Angels in particular. But you know, the one home run against, seven home runs against, like, it's often really hard to measure command. Like, statistically, there isn't a good way to do it unless you get, like, really, really advanced black box type of stats, which we don't have access to. And so home runs is often a good proxy for that, because when you're giving up home runs, it normally means that you're letting balls leak out over the plate into the dangerous areas and stuff. And that's the thing with Manoah. Like, of his last few starts, I don't know if his stuff is necessarily better. It's not, like, a different approach. But he's commanding it so much better. Mm-hmm. Like, at the beginning, it really was kind of a scattershot when he came up the first few starts. And that's kind of what he did at AAA, too, to some extent, to be honest. And we're kind of like, okay, maybe stuff is good enough that it's okay that he's not placing it very particularly because he just can blow people away. And his velocity isn't necessarily good enough to do that, although he's got the spin and some deception, too. But now, it's not like he's nailing his spots. Like, he's not Ryu. But there's a big difference in his ability to, you know, not leave pitches and, you know, totally the wrong plate, like, not leave the slider up and, like, not throw those completely non-competitive high fastballs that there's no way anyone's going to swing at. There's still some of that, but that's really come down. And that's what's impressed me, is that it just seems like he's got a better handle of his arsenal right now than when he first came up. And even yeah, and in AAA.
Absolutely. And I think that's something that can continue to improve over time, which is, like, kind of the exciting bit. You know, the stuff is exciting and seeing it work against big leaguers is exciting. But yeah, that's what it was, exactly what you said. You know, you're coming in and you're kind of, it is scattershot, and you were hoping, and we all, and it worked, that, you know, he could get by doing it that way and, you know, have that development in the big leagues where he gets better at commanding, and we're starting to see that. I mean, I think he's in a good place for it, you know, with the full resources of the big league staff and those, you know, the Pete Walkers and Matt Bushmans and everything who have done, you know, they've managed to get Robbie Ray to throw strikes, which is, like, a miracle. I think that has definitely been the difference. I think the one home run, I seem to recall who hit that too, which is,
he's been known to do that.
Yeah, about there. But yeah, you know, that I think is what makes it exciting. He, you know, if he could throw that, if that stuff continues to work the way that it has, and he can command it better, you know, the sky's the limit. It really feels like that. And this is a guy, I feel weird saying that, but then I also remember, you know, Keith Law being like, this is the guy who he thought was the best pitcher in the draft that year, or at least the best college pitcher in the draft. And, you know, that's premium talent. Like, that's not just a guy. So with that kind of pedigree, it makes you feel good about where this could be going as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point too. He's not someone who's kind of moved through the minors quickly and had kind of one great professional season in 2021 because of 2020 getting wiped out and 2019 being pretty limited. He's someone who had that draft pedigree, who had that prospect pedigree. This is someone people have liked for a long time, and he's showing up. And on this show, we've talked a lot about those sort of building blocks and the potential next waves behind the Bo and Vladdy. And right now, I don't think there's a compelling reason to believe that he isn't another building block. I know that health is always going to be a factor with pitchers, and you never know when someone's arm falls off. But it's been a while since the Blue Jays had a pitcher that, you know, it's probably been since Stroman that they had a pitcher. Mm-hmm. I was never as confident in Sanchez, and I know that he did have that one brilliant season. But, you know, personally, I didn't have that belief in him just because of his inability to control the ball, which was ultimately a big problem for him. Mm-hmm. But yeah, since Stroman, I don't think they've had a young pitcher that I've felt the way about that Manoah has made you feel over the course of this year, especially with the way he's improved.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe it's unfair to always bring, you know, Pearson into it, but he was that guy, but he never had put it together in anywhere close to this sort of way. And the health thing has just been such a disappointing setback for, I'm sure, him more than anyone else. But yeah, you feel real good about Manoah, and Pearson is still a wild card out there. But it's a good place to be, you know, as an organization, and it's weirdly better than you would have thought, you know, 6 months ago even.
And a little Manoah family fun fact, because we kind of got invested in the Manoah family last week when we had David Singh on the show, is that his brother just made the jump to AA, Eric Manoah. So we're getting closer potentially to having multiple Manoahs in the major leagues, which is good. That's just good, fun entertainment. I think that I'm sure Eric would have the same type of compelling cheering section and would be...
No doubt.
yeah, I don't think he's quite the physical monster that Alec is, but I'm sure he's not tiny either. I don't have the measurements in front of me, but if I had to guess, I'd guess that he's not Marcus Stroman's size. So if Manoah is sort of the bright spot this week, the other side of that coin has got to be Vladdy. And, you know, some of Vladdy's struggles have been maybe overstated, I think, to some degree, in the sense that he's still been an effective hitter since the All-Star break. Some people are sort of treating it like he's fallen off a cliff. Mm-hmm. He has fallen off a cliff in the context of, like, you know, that the Bryce Harper season that was the model that he was following or whatever. He's not on that path anymore. He's been significantly worse in recent weeks. What are you seeing with the Vladdy downturn right now?
Yeah, it's. I mean, if I could fix it, I would be paid much more than I am, you know. I don't know if part of it's fatigue. You know, he did get hit on the hand, but I think these struggles have started before that. Maybe sometimes these things snowball. I mean, you can definitely see in the field he's been, you know, missed a couple balls there going back from first base in the Angels series. Which is uncharacteristic of the way he played for most of the season, which was, you know, just like saving guys the whole time. And I don't know. I heard someone suggest, you know, maybe it's if it's pressure, you know, to continue to be as successful as he was at the start. And there can be many things, but I don't know. I don't know. Do you see anything in the swing? I know it hasn't, you know, he hasn't been. I mean, he's been rolling over on balls more, and it's been more the ground. I don't know where the ground ball rate has gone. You know, I'm just anecdotally, it feels like we're seeing a little bit more of that, Vladdy. But also, it's so weird because it's like, I think his weighted runs created plus is like 113 since the start of July, basically. Or I think that's about right. I tweeted or wrote about that, which is, you know, it's like, oh wow, he's in a slump. It's like he's 13% better than the rest of the league, and he's like, he's still really good, and he's 22 years old. Like, it is all sort of like within context, the quote unquote struggles, but yeah, it's noticeable, it's there. He's definitely not in the locked in as he was earlier in the season.
There's sort of, yeah, there's kind of two sides of it. Like, one of it is sort of the quasi scientific side when I like look at like what's going on or whatever. And one thing that really stands out to me is just he's chasing a lot more. Like, he's not commanding the zone as well. Mm-hmm. And when you're a guy like Vladdy, whose bat to ball skills are so good, that some, like, for a lot of other guys, like, for example, if you took, I don't know, let's say Randall Grichuk, and he started chasing a bunch more, what you would end up with is a ton of strikeouts because he would be chasing pitches out of the zone and be missing those pitches. What's happening mm-hmm. with Vladdy, I think, is he's chasing more, but because he's got the great bat to ball, he's making a lot of contact outside the zone, and then that's resulting in more dribblers and things like that. Like, his strikeout rate hasn't really gone up significantly. His walk rate's gone down, not hugely, but it's just, for me, I see him chasing, and that's when he gets in front of those balls and whatnot. Like you said, if I knew exactly what it was and had the ability to fix it, I'd be worth, my services would be worth a lot more on the open market. But
yeah,
that's one thing that I see with him that stands out. And then the other side of it is like the totally non-scientific side, where he seems like a guy who's so loose generally, and like effective when he's loose, and when, you know, when he tightens up and he seems to struggle, there can be some snowballing. Like I remember when he started his major league career, he didn't get off to a great start, and it was a long time coming for that first home run to happen. Like I remember we were on first home run Vladdy watch, and I think that you know, he puts a lot of pressure on himself because he's always been incredibly successful his entire life at this. And I do think he's someone who can be a bit of a vibes guy, where when he's happy and he's loose, the game comes easy to him. And then when it doesn't for a bit, it can be a bit jarring. And, you know, he's still young. He's still kind of growing the mental side of his game as well. That's probably something he'll get better with over time. But you do see him fall into these holes and get frustrated, which is such a contrast to him normally, where he's so happy-go-lucky and smiling and dancing and having a good time.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And then yet, you know, the Vladdy of the first half kind of goes away a bit, and then George Springer shows up hitting like pretty much exactly, you know, being as productive, which has been real fun. Not to take away from our you know, tortured Vladdy talk, but it's weird how it's almost like that has reversed.
Yeah, they switch places. It's the Monstars type of talent steal situation. Well, when you get the multiple player of the week is a stupid award that doesn't need to exist. But when you get two of those in a row, it's a pretty good indication that you're doing something right. And that kind of leads into the philosophical question I had for you. I haven't had a philosophical question for you for a while, but I was thinking about Springer and Vladdy, and sort of exactly how you said, how they've kind of crossed paths right now. And my question is, if you had to have one of them taken at bat to with your life on the line, and that I'm going to say not that at bat's not tomorrow, because if it's tomorrow, okay, I think you're going to just take Springer. This at bat is in early October. The Blue Jays have made the playoffs. It's against a totally like nondescript pitcher who has no specific characteristics. Vladdy or George Springer, who would you want taking that at bat?
Is this October of this year?
October 2021. I think that's enough time for, I mean, I don't know, you can disagree. I think that's enough time to assume that Vladdy will be like not actively in a funk.
Right. Yeah, I'm not trying to say that I believe Vlad's not going to get out of it, but I think I have to take Springer at this point. Just because, I mean, if the issues are physical, which I don't, you know, I'm not well versed enough to assess that. But you know, if it's just that he's, you know, he's young. He hasn't done 162 before. He obviously did a ton of work in the off season. And if it's just sort of the grind is getting to him, then I'm probably more comfortable with the guy who's done it before.
Also pretty good history for Springer and, the month of October.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. What was interesting to me is I was looking at rest of season projections, because that sort of reflects what, you know, Zips, just to use Fangraphs one, thinks their true talent is to some extent. And so like Guerrero Jr. right now, his rest of season for Zips is 143 WRC+, and Springer is 141. So like they basically see those guys as being, you know, from this point on, or like kind of where they're at from a true talent perspective, the same guy. Not exactly the same shape of production, but like a little bit, maybe I think it's more power for Springer, more on base for Vladdy. I think I'd ultimately take Vladdy just because of, yeah, just kind of my level of belief in his talent. Like he's shown he can be sort of for a stretch, you know, a pretty significant stretch, the most dominant offensive player in the game. And although Springer, yeah, I don't think Springer's ever done that for as long as Vladdy did that this season, like for a full half of the season, be sort of the best hitter in baseball. And, you know, Vladdy's still, you know, theoretically getting better and stuff, but, you know, Springer's been incredible to watch. I think, to be honest, a lot of people didn't realize when they got Springer, Like Blue Jays fans, I think a lot of people thought of him as maybe the third wheel to like Altuve and Correa, and Springer was kind of the other guy. But over the last couple of years, like 2019-20, he was a top 10 hitter in baseball and definitely the best one of those Astros. And I think, yeah, because he's sort of part a cog in that machine, especially that machine having some dubious reputation that's well earned.
Yes.
I think that people maybe didn't look at it closely, didn't realize just how good Springer is, and I don't think anyone is having trouble conceptualizing that now.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's like, I'm surprised at how much better he is than, you see the numbers on the page, it's just consistent, good production out of him, and obviously he's on a bit of a heater right now, but like, yeah, I knew it was great. I knew he was a great player, but seeing it up close is just a different thing. I had watched some Astros games over the years, obviously, but just seeing him day in, day out, obviously with the vibes aspect of this team, that's also very good. And he's fit in there well, but yeah, a fun guy to watch, to a degree that I don't think I really appreciated until seeing it every day up close.
Yeah.
Up close on my TV.
Up close-ish. Up in the same province as it. Yeah, I mean, he's so aggressive in the zone and so patient out of the zone at times. Like, it looks like sometimes he's got, like, the best of the Bichette just letting that swing absolutely eat and the Vladdy patience. And it's...
That's something that Atkins was talking about this week, I think, a couple times. I wrote about his radio hits the other day, and, like... Or maybe it was even earlier, but him just talking literally about that, about the striking a balance between aggression and selectivity, and how Springer does that just about as well as anybody. And you're absolutely right, and you can literally see it.
Yeah, and there was a piece at Fangraphs about the Blue Jays' sort of selectivity and aggression the other day, and on first pitches, Springer had the biggest difference in the league of swinging for the first pitch in the zone and out of the zone. So I'm not quoting the numbers exactly right, but I think in the zone he'll swing like 60% of the time, and out of the zone it's something like 7. Like he's just so locked in. Yeah. Like if it's a good pitch, like I'm 100% willing to go for it, but I'm not going to be cheated into swinging for something dumb, which is it's a fun thing to see.
It's interesting to me, like, to, because there's been the little lineup tweaks, and there was some lineup talk, that to me makes sense why he has been, good as a leadoff hitter. If he just has that in him, right? He's not the guy who is like, okay, I need to see this guy throw a bunch of pitches. I need to really, I'm not saying Springer doesn't rely on preparation, because obviously he does, but just to have that natural ability, I think maybe helps him in that role, and we've definitely seen him excel in that role, and that's obviously been what he's done in his career too, which is real nice. More leadoff home runs, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, as we saw him a little bit in the fourth and fifth spot in the lineup, and fourth he could definitely theoretically fit, but he's back in the leadoff hole. That's what he's done for most of his career, and I think the Blue Jays fans are going to see him in the leadoff hole for many, many years. So it's pretty cool to have that part of your team kind of totally locked in. Another thing, just getting off Springer, that happened this week, I think it's worth going over, is the way the rotation sort of sorted itself out in the way that it does. Normally it's, between injury and poor performance, a surplus of pitching can never last for long. And this one didn't. Ross Stripling down with the oblique. That's a nightmare injury. We've seen it with Julian Merriweather. Back in the day, we saw it with Brett Laurie. Like, the timetables for that are, wildly varied. You never know. I don't really consider Stripling someone who's going to necessarily contribute going forward at any point this season. I don't know what his timeline literally is, but those injuries are just so difficult. And so now that Matt Stripling bullpen debate is over, which... To be honest, it seemed a bit silly that they were like, oh, let's put Stripling in because he knows how to be a reliever. Like, there were some quotes like that.
Right.
And yeah. It's like, do you think the Dodgers give a shit if their guys have experience as a reliever. Like when they end a season with like 8 good starters or whatever, as they yeah. as they normally do, they just shove them into the bullpen because they know, oh, you're a starter. It's easier to be a reliever. You'll be fine. It's not like, oh, what is in your background and what are you comfortable with? Like, I would like Matt's. I've said it before. Like, I thought Matt's had some potential bullpen utility, whereas Stripling's was, I don't think that exciting. But it really, it really kind of goes to show how crucial the Berríos addition is. Because, I mean, you could say like, would they be at even this point if they hadn't got him? Maybe not. In terms of sort of the momentum and also what he provided in his first couple starts. But if he wasn't on the team now and they had just lost Stripling, like, that would be as silly as it sounds, because we don't think of Stripling as this great player, but he was producing at a very high level. That might have been kind of a quasi-death blow for the Blue Jays' chances in an alternate history where they don't have Berríos.
Yeah, that's I hadn't thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. Yeah, I mean, I don't have, like, no hope for Thomas Hatch, and, you know, he provided some utility last year, but, you know, the Jays are getting to a point, especially when they add a guy like Berríos, that kind of talent is not as important, I don't think, anymore, and doesn't look as great as it did when you're sort of in more of a building mode. And I know, you know, adding one guy doesn't change that, and they, you know, but I don't think a lot of Thomas Hatch starts down the stretch, as well as having Matt's in the rotation. Yeah, that would have been not ideal. You know, obviously they would have soldiered on and wouldn't have acted like that was a death blow, but that would have been a big blow, I think, absolutely, if they didn't get that extra starter. And Berríos, like you say, I mean, against the Angels, that was not ideal, but he's obviously an excellent pitcher and showed as much in the first couple of starts.
One thing too that I'm not sure people are giving enough credit to is that Matt's has been good lately.
Like, he has. Yes,
in
he
his
has.
Last 5 starts, he's got a 2.92 ERA and a 2.89 FIP. There've been a couple of shorter outings. One of them was during the doubleheader, so it's kind of changes the shape of how many innings you want a guy to throw. But I think a lot of people were sort of looking forward to the idea of Matt's getting dropped out of the rotation, and I understand why. But if I'm a Blue Jays fan tomorrow or like going forward, I'm not exactly terrified by the idea of Matt's starting a game, especially if it's not against a great lineup. Obviously, he's not going to be your favorite guy to see on the mound, but there was this, you know, the sense of pessimism surrounding Matt's that I thought was even maybe a little bit overblown at the time. And I think people need to readjust themselves a little bit and realize that, especially for a back end starter, Matt's is kind of fine.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, I would have been more inclined to go with Stripling if they had to make a hard choice, like even as recently as a couple weeks ago. But yeah, these last few starts, even the one against the Angels was have been fine. And you're right, yeah, more than fine. And I think that is something that people sort of battle with. It's like, you know, the what is a fifth starter? It's like the bar is pretty low, and he is pretty easily crossing it, especially lately.
Yeah, I think people are inclined to believe that you've got this 5-person rotation and that even the fifth one needs to be good. And that's just, it's not realistic from a team building perspective in terms of being able to afford that many guys or being able to develop that many guys. I know I said like the Dodgers do it and, you know, the Padres have a great rotation and the White Sox, like it's possible, but very rarely are you going to have that kind of quality rotation depth. Normally you have quantity rotation depth. You've got Thomas Hatches and Anthony Kays and stuff like that in reserve, and you're hoping to survive those innings. So Matt's he's playing at a better than survival level, which wasn't necessarily the case before, but I think it's something that deserves a little bit of recognition that he is not killing this team.
Also, the other side of that coin is they have the 4 starters ahead of him are really damn good.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And another guy kind of in that role, in the role of kind of being overshadowed by the other ones but doing well, that is starting to get a little bit of shine this week and I think deserves more, it's a little bit of a Teoscar Hernandez appreciation moment because of just he's been on this ridiculous heater and it looked like he could have been a third AL player of the week after Springer had done it twice. I don't think he's going to do that now. But it's interesting because when a guy gets an all-star nod, it's hard to say that he's not appreciated. But Teoscar Hernandez, he's just, you know, he's behind those top four guys in people's minds, you know, Springer, Vladdy, Semien, Bo, rightfully so, especially considering his defensive limitations. But I was kind of digging up some stuff on him. And since he returned from AAA in 2019, so he kind of had that time in Buffalo and he sort of had to figure himself out, he's come back and his OPS is 24th in all of baseball. So this is a period of close to 2 years. And the guys above him, Semien, Yelich, and Gurriel, the guys below him, like Max Muncy, Kyle Schwarber, J.D. Martinez, and Pete Alonso. Like, you're talking about stars. And stars,
yeah.
Some of those stars, like Pete Alonso, is like a first baseman. Like, some of these stars aren't like two-way guys and they're stars because they do it all. Like, some of those guys are bat first slash only stars. and Hernandez is right in with them. And I think it's one of those things where I was thinking about, like, if Hernandez played for a different team, the one that came to my mind, and it's just random, I was just thinking of a fairly good, well-known team that needs offense where his bat would not be buried behind other people. But if he were a Met, like, would he be famous nationally as like a as a like a player that baseball fans know about? Like, wouldn't he be? He's an
I think he'd have to be.
Like, he's an exciting player. He can run a little bit. He hits big home runs. He actually is making a lot more contact this year, close to a 300 hitter, striking out a little less. And then he's got this fun personality as well. Like, it is weird. It seems like he's kind of buried in the Blue Jays ecosystem. And he deserves a little bit better, because if he were somewhere else, he does have some of these star qualities.
He does. He absolutely does. And I was looking into some of those numbers like you were as well. You know, I think he slumped in June. Like, I think if you look at his splits, that was tough. And then that maybe sort of, you know, I know he was the all-star, but that was also sort of, he was voted in by the fans, and that maybe not tarnishes it, but maybe, I don't know if he'd have been on the all-star team if not for that. Not to say he wasn't deserving, but that may have just broken a different way. But yeah, he absolutely, I think that the little slump in June was like the only month of the last two calendar years where he had a WRC plus below. Like, I think there was one that where he was like 96, and I think the June was like in the 70s. And then every other month has been like star level. Like, and maybe he still gets that sort of streaky reputation a bit, which, you know, 2 years shouldn't necessarily undo that. But he is right back to proving why he's so valuable. And this week has been really fun to watch him get that shine a bit, because I think you're absolutely right. Like, I mean, if he was on the Pirates, he'd be like, he's gonna be their lone all-star for the next 7 years.
Yeah, I mean, last year there was a little bit of Blue Jays broadcast pumping some MVP vibes on Hernandez that it was pretty premature, and I definitely wouldn't have supported that. But he is someone who it just seems like he's hurt a little bit. I mean, I don't know if he, what level of fame he aspires to or whatever, but he is someone who it feels like he's hurt a little bit by the context of being on the Blue Jays, because he kind of melds into the background where it wouldn't be for someone else. And I think he's also someone who people maybe don't realize is coming up for a contract pretty soon. Like, he's got 2 years of arbitration after this season. Like, this offseason is the sort of time when you would, if you want to lock down Teoscar Hernandez, it might be the time to do it, because you have a little bit of leverage with 2 years of control. And because his first year of arbitration, he makes in the $4 million, like, those numbers aren't going to get huge. They could get significant, but they're not going to get massive because he's already on this track. Yeah. So you have some leverage there in that he's not going to make a ton of money in the next 2 years. So if you extend him, you can say, listen, you're going to make way more money in the next couple of years than you would have through arbitration. And then in exchange, what you're giving us back is a couple more years of control out the back that are maybe a little bit less expensive than he would have been as a free agent. But his case is pretty interesting in terms of, like, do you want to invest in this player? And the reasons to say no seem to have shrunken considerably over the last sort of 24 months.
I think so, yeah. And I think they and I as well are probably encouraged by the defense, which, you know, is still not great, but is an area where I think it can be improved and could continue to improve. And we've definitely seen improvement. I mean, just literally year to year, from where it was like he was an absolute disaster to where it's like, oh, he's kind of bad, but, you know, he's hitting well. There was some of that earlier in the year, but I think he has been real solid there. You know, not elite, obviously, by any stretch, but certainly not unplayable. And that was always sort of weirdly, it was funny to me because I seem to recall a guy who played for the Jays from, 09 to 2018 or whatever it was, who played in right field, who was not an elite defender either, had a great arm, but there were a lot of weird routes and balls not tracked down as quickly as they could have been. And it didn't matter because he could hit, and that's obviously different players, but different hitters especially. But the production is there for Teoscar, not at the same level, but I think he absolutely can fit and can be a guy there. He could also DH a lot, once the Jays sort of clear out some of these guys that are sort of more fringier members of the roster, which is basically a long-winded way of saying, they should extend this guy. They will be able to find a place for him. And he's really fun and really good. And I think, I don't think he gets appreciated also, what a chill, cool dude he seems to be, and humble and everything, that they love about that sort of stuff too. Like, anytime he's interviewed, which is not enough, this dude gets it. He seems pretty like a pretty good dude.
Yeah, I did a feature story on him a couple of years ago about sort of the work he was putting in on the defensive side, talking to him and Budzinski and stuff, and when he ended up playing a little center field, which was an interesting shot, to be honest, on their part. Like, it was a sort of thing, and they thought it might actually simplify it with the angles. Like, you're just like chase the ball, throw it to the cutoff man, basically, in center field. And it didn't quite work out. But I remember thinking in 2018, like, okay, this guy can hit a little bit, but he's slightly above average hitter, a disaster in the field, and is old enough that I'm not confident that he's going to find another step. Find another level, and he's found that other level, and it's okay that he's not a great defender. Like you said, like, his bat is good enough that it vastly outweighs that, and every player on your team is not going to be a flawless player who's excellent in every facet of the game. Like, we want to have 9 Mike Trouts on the field, but it's not going to work that way. Like, you have to take players for their strengths and weaknesses. We've talked about that with Bo Bichette. Like, he's not a great defender right now. He may never be, but he might be a long-term shortstop who is just, giving you 5 runs back in the field every year at shortstop, but that's okay because of all the stuff he does with the bat, especially relative to his position. And Teoscar is the same way. Like, yeah, if he was a great, great defender, maybe he could be that sort of 5-win player, and he's fast and he can throw, so you think maybe that's going to happen for him. It probably won't. Like, he just, in terms of his instincts and stuff, like, it gets better, but there's only so much better it's going to get. He's probably going to be a player who hits really well and gives runs back in the field, but at the end of the day, that package is valuable, and I think the Blue Jays would be smart to lock him up over the long term, and I wouldn't be shocked if they did it this offseason.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, lock them all up. Let's go. Let's just keep this team together forever. It's going to be weird. The offseason is going to be fascinating, I think. Extension wise, he's definitely on the list. We'd all love to see, a Bichette or a Guerrero extension. There are a lot of opportunities for the team to be shaped slightly differently and slightly better, but I think that would be hard to do it without him. If that's, I don't think that's the way that they should go. I think they should keep him. Whereas maybe the other corner guy, Grichuk is stuck. We're stuck with him at this rate, just based on his contract, I think. But, Gurriel, I feel, is a little more misshapen. I think we've talked about this. And Biggio, obviously, just sort of has to be lower down the list. But, no, I mean, if you're talking about core guys to keep around, I think Teoscar, gets my seal of approval.
Absolutely, he's on that list, and I think it's a more, like, I just don't necessarily see a Bichette or Guerrero extension coming down the pipe, although, I'd love to see it. With Vladdy, it's a little bit interesting because this year, if he had a mind to do something like that, it would be a good year to capitalize on. So maybe if he thought, I do want the big extension, then this would be the year to maybe negotiate it, but I still, those guys are far enough out that it's going to be hard to do. And they also, it's been talked about ad nauseum, but they, it is a factor, the background people come from, right? Like, that's how Ozzie Albies and Acuna Jr. ended up in their extensions because they're getting that money in quickly was more valuable to them, whereas Bichette and Guerrero grew up in these athlete families and whatnot, and they can afford to bet on themselves in a different way.
It's just not it's not life-changing like money right in front of you. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, before we wrap it here, just looking at the weekend series ahead, you got the Seattle Mariners. We've talked about the Red Sox being frauds on this podcast. The Mariners are like Red Sox plus. It's kind of, in fact, ridiculous the degree to which they've dominated these close games. And I don't really understand it. Like, normally in those cases where they don't, where a team dominates close games, it's sort of like the Orioles of old or whatever, where they have this incredible bullpen. And I know it's hard to do it with clutch hitting over a lengthy period of time. But with a bullpen, you can kind of get away with being in these close games all the time. We see that with the Rays occasionally. But the Mariners don't. They don't have that incredible bullpen. Like it doesn't really make sense. They've just been sort of stupidly clutch, which, I mean, every fan would love their team to just randomly wander in and be stupidly clutch. But it's just not the... Like, I'm looking at it right now. The Mariners' bullpen ERA is 3.97. The Blue Jays is 3.92. So, like, as shitty as the Blue Jays'
bullpen... That's a little surprising, yeah.
As shitty as the Blue Jays' bullpen has been at times, it's actually been more effective at keeping runs off the board than the Mariners, and yet the Blue Jays have been useless late and close, and the Mariners have been gods of that. So that's kind of frustrating from the outside looking in. In terms of like,
yeah, what it also makes you worry about the outcome of the weekend series, right?
Yeah,
because the Blue Jays should beat this team quite easily, I feel, but that just hasn't been the case for the teams that the Mariners have faced this year.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I look at this lineup, there's just nothing impressive about it. I'm curious in terms of like Jared Kelenic is up, and he has not really done anything. He was sort of like the latest service time manipulation guy. This guy's ready. And I'm not jumping on the bandwagon of like, they were right to keep him down, because it was definitely bullshit. But just because they weren't right to keep him down doesn't mean that he was going to kill it at the major league level. He hasn't. The pitching is interesting. It's going to be tough this weekend because Kikuchi is legit. He's really come around and becomes a top of the rotation size starter. And they're also going to see Logan Gilbert, who is a rookie who's been really effective as well. So it's tough because when they roll out those best starters, the Mariners are potentially going to be in those low scoring games that for some reason they're comfortable in. And that's not where the Blue Jays want to be. So it's easy to look at the Mariners roster and think like, oh, this is two wins. Who knows? Maybe they can sweep them. I know they don't have the Blue Jays fans coming down the same way as they would have in previous years. It might have been helpful. But the Mariners are an annoyance, but they wouldn't be an annoyance if they were just trash. Like, they're an annoyance because they seem trash, but they're quasi-effective somehow.
Yeah. And you're right. And the pitching is a problem. I think it'll be an interesting series, obviously. But it does feel like, you know, and I'm sure it's felt like that for every team that's played the Mariners this year, but it just feels like those are games there for the taking. And yet, I am not super confident about how that's all going to turn out.
Yeah, I wonder if you're a Mariners fan this weekend, are you thinking like, okay, this is our big chance. Like, we're going to leapfrog someone ahead of us in the wild card, or are those hopes starting to slip? I guess, yeah, I don't know. If you're a Mariners fan, this is probably like a huge series because you're like, if we get ahead of the Blue Jays, that's one fewer team that's in front of us.
Yeah, I guess so. I sort of like figured they were done after the weird trade deadline where they, you know, moved out talent and didn't really seem to believe in the team, which I think, you
which
know,
is
objectively
fair,
is probably right.
100% yeah. Right, yeah.
But hard to say to your players and your fans.
Yeah, it's a tough one. We'll see how they do this weekend. It's going to be a little bit less fun than usual because of the influx of Blue Jays fans won't be there, but they'll be, with any luck, they can get out in some of those games and not deal with one run outcomes and just get a few runs early in the game and play those sort of comfortable wins that have come their way fairly frequently in the last few weeks. Maybe that's what we'll see.
They've got guys who can do that. Yeah.
They've got guys who can do that. So we will see you next week. Appreciate you guys all tuning in, subscribing, downloading, and we'll have a new Blue Jays happy hour for you, not Friday the 13th edition, in a week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.